Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom, welcome back to today's Daf, which is Erevin Daf Lamed Hey. We are 10 lines from the top of the Amud and discussing a case where a person placed the food for his Erev into a large-sized closet, a migdal. So it's locked inside this closet with no key in sight. We have a machlekes in our Mishnah. Rameh says, this Erev is valid because, theoretically, he has the ability to access the food which is in this migdal. Whereas Rav Leza says, unless he has a key within reach, this Erev is invalid because he has no access to the food within this locked closet. Says the Gemara 10 lines from the top, Rabba v'Rav Yosef, the Amrit Havai, they both explained what is the basis of the Machlokes in our Mishnah. So they explained as follows. Hocha b'migdol shel eitz askinan, we're speaking about a wooden closet. And what is the Machlokes? The Mar Savar Kliu. Rameyer holds this large size migdol is classified as a utensil. And if it's a kli, then there's no halacha of binyan or soyser when it comes to a kli. Vein binyan bekelim, vein stir bekelim. There's no malacha min haTorah of building or demolishing when it involves a kli. Therefore, min haTorah, he has full access to the food within this locked wooden closet. He simply breaks it open and accesses his food. Umar savar oyelu. However, Blazer maintains this large size closet is considered to be an oil, like a structure. And therefore, he has no ability to access the food locked therein because he can't demolish it. That involves a malachim and a Torah of Saisa. So the question is whether this large size Migdal Shalates is classified as a Kli, in which case he has access to the food inside, or it's classified as an oil, in which case he has no access to the food therein because it involves a malachim and a Torah of Saisa. And if he has no access to the food, then that food therein cannot activate his Erev. Says the Gemara, Repluk the Dani Tanoi. This Machlekes is actually compatible with another Machlekes Tanoim who seem to be arguing about this very point, whether this large size closet is classified as a clear oil. This Nan, or some have this Sanya, we learned in a Braisa, Hikish al Gabe Shido Teva Migdal. This is involving a Zov. We know that a Zav who moves something, he transfers Tumah to that thing, even if he doesn't actually come into contact with it, if he's wearing a glove. That's called Hesed HaZav. It's an indirect interaction with the Zav. So if he moves something, it becomes Tumah. What if the Zav banged on top of a Shida, which is a large-sized carriage, Teva, a chest, a Migdal, large-sized closet, Hikish al-Gabi, Shida, Teva, Migdal, Tumayin. So if you move them in this manner, they become tummy. This is the Shita of the Tanakam. Rav Nechemya, Rav Shimon Matar, they maintain that this large sized chest remains tar. My love, shall we not say Baha Kamiflagi? This very question is actually the point of contention here. Ma Savar Kliu. Tanakama holds that this large size structure, this large size closet, armor, carriage, is classified as a kli, and therefore, if it's moved by the Zav, it becomes Tomei. Umar Savar Oyehu. As opposed to Rav Nechemya and Rav Shimon, they hold this large size thing is called an oil. It's like a tent, like a structure, like a home, which cannot be Mekabel Tumah. The Zav touches a home, it doesn't become Tomei. Therefore, although the Zav here moved the Shida Teva Migdal, they're considered to be an oil, and they will not become Tomei as a result. So what proposes that just as we find the Machlekes in this price, whether this large-sized Migdal is classified as a Kli or oil pertaining to Tumas Zav, likewise, this will be the very point of Machlekes in our Mishnah. Whether this Migdal is called a Kli, which allows one to break it to access the food therein, or it's called an oil, which prevents a person from demolishing it to access his food, and therefore the Erev is inaccessible. Amra Abaye, you can't say this. If a Tisbara, can you really think, can you really suggest that this question is the very point of a contention in this Machlekes here regarding the Zav? That's actually not so. Vatanya, because haven't we learned in a different price? Oyel v'nisat tamei. when something is an oil, a true oil, a tent, but it's transportable, meaning it was moved by the Zav, oil vin nisat, it was moved by the Zav, tamei, even though it's an oil. If it was moved, it becomes tamei, machmas, the hesed of the Zav. Kli, ve'en nisat tar. Conversely, if you have a kli, something which all agree is classified as a kli, it's a small size kli, but it was not actually moved by the Zav. For instance, it was nailed into the ground, or it's too heavy, that the Zav cannot move it. Tar, all agree, there's no Tumas Hesed applicable to this type of kli. So the Brisa clearly tells us that it's unrelated to the classification of the item here. Even if something is considered an oil, but if it's been moved by the Zav, if it can be moved, and it was moved, it's Tamei. In contrast to a kli, where it's something which can't be moved, it's nailed into the ground, it's heavy. So this type of kli cannot have Hesed Hazav. So it's very clear that it has nothing to do with how we classify it. If it was moved by the Zav, it's Tamei. Otherwise, it's Tar, Uktani Sefer. And likewise, we actually learned in this Sefer, the latter part of that previous Braisa, discussing the Machlokes between Rav Hanukkah and Nechemya, the Braisa concludes by saying, V'mahoyu nisoitin tmeim. Getting back to the Shita Teva Migdal, the Braisa says, if they were actually moved by the Zav, all agree that it's Tamei. The Braisa concludes, Zachal, this is your general rule of thumb. Nisad machmas koichei Tamei. If the item was actually moved as a result of the direct koyach of the Zav, he directly moved it, surely it's Tamei. Whether it's an oil, whether it's a kli, machmas ra'ada toher. If the item moved, not directly to the Zav, rather as a result of ra'ada, a tremor, a quake. For instance, the Zav stamped his foot on the ground next to this chest. And as a result of that bang, the chest quivered and shook. This thing is tar, because it's a very indirect form of interaction with the Zav. Rashi calls it koyach koychai. It's doubly removed from the Zav. He banged the floor, the floor received that energy and created that tremor, which in turn shook this migdal. That's too indirect to be considered tumas hesed. So the Braisa sets forth a klal. If there's a direct movement, it's tamei. If it's very indirect movement, then it's tar. But in any case, we see that even this migdal would be tamei if it was moved directly by the Zav. So apparently, there's no machlokes there in that Braisa between Tanakama and Nechemya, whether this migdal is classified like a kli and can have tuma by being moved by the Zav, or classified as an oil and cannot receive tuma through being moved by the Zav. The Braisa clearly tells us it's unrelated to the classification of the item. The pointer is one question: was it moved directly by the Zav, in which case it's tamei; indirectly, in which case it's tar. So you can't say that the point of Machlokes is whether this migdal is regarded as a kli or oil. It doesn't seem to have any relation to the Machlokes discussed here. Says the Gemara, Elamar Abaye, indeed, it's unrelated to that question. The question there is a different question: whether this migdal was actually moved by the Zav. Meaning, whether it's a kli, whether it's an oil, if it's moved directly by the Zav, it becomes tamei. So what is the question there? The kuli am all agree. Hesed machmas koichei tamei. If the kli or the oil was moved directly through the koyach of the Zav, certainly it becomes tamei. That's agreed upon by all. Machmas ra'ada tar. If a mili was moved as a result of a tremor in the ground, the Zav banged the floor, and that in turn shook and moved this item, all agree that's too far removed from the Zav, and it remains tar. So in both these scenarios, all agree regarding the halacha of this item. If it's a direct contact, a direct movement, it's tamei. If it's indirect movement, it's tar. So what then is the point of machlekes here? Says Abaye, v'hocha. You know what we're speaking about here? Bira'ada machmas koichei askinan. It shook as a result of a direct koich of the zav. So the zav banged the shida. He banged right on it. But it merely shook as a result of that bang. It was a ra'ada. It was a quake, a tremor. It didn't actually move out of its spot. So it was a direct tremor, which was applied to it by the zav. So the question here is this considered to be hesed azav? If it shook, but it didn't move out of its place, and this will be the machlekes. The marasav are heavy hesed. Tanakama holds this as well is considered to be movement, and therefore it becomes tamit through the zav. Umarasav are lava hesed. However, the other tanayim, Nechemya, Reb Shimon, they hold merely quaking and shivering and shaking is not considered to be hesed. It's not a drastic enough effect from the act of the zav, and is not included in the category of tumas hesed, and therefore it remains tar. Let's stop for a moment. So, regarding tumas hesed, the Gemara tells us the tumas hesed can apply to a kli or to an oil equally. There's no distinction between the two. The question is whether it moved or not. The Gemara gives us three categories. If it was hesed machmas koichai, meaning it actually moved out of its place as a result of a direct action of the zav, then it's tameh. If it was only hesed machmas ra'ada, if it moved as a result of a tremor, which was affected by the zav, he banged the floor near this item, which in turn caused this item to move out of its place, all agree that's too far removed from the act of the zav, and it remains tar. When there was a ra'ada, machmas kaychai, meaning the zav directly impacted this chayfetz, but it didn't remove out of its place, it was not removed out of its location, it simply shook and quivered. Then we have a machlokes. Is that considered to be hesed or not? So it has nothing to do with whether something is an oil or a kli, because all these halachas will apply equally to something which is a kli or something which is an oil. So getting back to our Mishnah here, we were exploring the pshat and the machlokes. When he has his food locked into this migdal, Rav Meir says it's accessible, Rav Lezer says it's not accessible. So initially the Gemara wanted to say, the machlokes is whether we classify this migdal as a oil, which prevents him from breaking it open, or we classify it as a kli, which allows him to get in there. And we said it's compatible with the machlekes regarding zav, but the Gemara discounted that approach, because apparently the discussion by Ziva is unrelated to this question, how to classify something, whether a kli or oil. So let's get back to our Mishnah. If so, umas nisnim maimuk minala. If that's the case, how are we going to establish and interpret our Mishnah? Meaning, as Rashi explains, if we're speaking about a small-sized migdal, which cannot contain the amount of 40 saw, all agree it's a kli. And certainly, he should be able to break it open to get his food. If we're speaking about a large-sized migdal, which can't contain 40 saw, all would agree it's classified as an oil. In which case, he would be prevented from breaking it open. So when does this machlokes apply? Says the Gemara, Abaye v'Rava, the Amr Tavai, they both explain as follows. Very simple machlekes. B'minol, b'manol, v'karta, v'misnaskinam. We're speaking about even a large-sized migdal, which is perhaps an oil. And it was closed up, it was locked up with a rope. That's how we locked up the migdal. U'boi sakina l'mifsakei, which requires a knife to cut it open. So in order to access his food, he needs to actually cut that rope open. The question is as follows. Can he bring a knife for this purpose? Tanakama sava lo krab yosi. Tanakama Rab Meir, who says his food is accessible because he was like Rab Yosi. The Omar, kol ha-keilim etolim b'Shabbos. All types of keilim can be moved on Shabbos. Chutz mimasra gadol, except for a large size saw. V'yasa shemachresha, or this rod which was used as part of the plow. These things are delicate and designated for their specific malacha. It's called muktzu machmas chasar and kis. A person wouldn't divert its use for other purposes due to its high value and its fact that it's delicate. But otherwise, a typical standard knife can be used to cut through a rope. And therefore he holds the food of the Erev is accessible. Rav Lezer savar klal k'Rav Nechemya. He knows that Rav Chemya, who subscribes to a unique shita when it comes to muksa, the Amar, afilu talis, even a baguette, afilu tarvad, even a spoon, ein nitalin elu l'tzarech tashmishin. They can only be moved on Shabbos if he's moving it for the sake of its designated use. So he wants to wear the talis? Sure, go ahead and carry it. If he wants to use a spoon to scoop something out, some food, sure. But to take a knife, which is designated primarily to be used for cutting meat, cutting bread, and use it to cut a rope, it's off limits for that purpose. He cannot be metaltled for that. Therefore, Blazer holds. He has no way to get his food, which requires a knife to cut the rope open to access the food. And therefore, he says, the Erev is invalid because it's out of reach. Let's take a look at Rashi inside here. So Rashi here is towards the middle of the column, exactly 27 lines from the top of the Amud. Rashi begins with Umas Nisan. So coming to interpret our Mishnah. Umas Nisan, the Erev of Maimah Kminila. How are we going to establish it? How are we going to explain it? The Lukuliam all agree. If Gadol Hu, if this Migdal is large in size, Oyelu. Why is it called an Erev? Because if it's an oil, he has no access to it. He can't break it. It involves a malach of seisr. E cotton. If it's a small size miglo, shein emachzik mem sa belach. Doesn't contain 40 sa. Kli, all agree it's regarded as a kli. And he can break it open to get his food. Umay tami der blezer. And what will be the reason of Reb Elezer, who considers the food locked inside this miglo as out of reach? Says the Merkata Remisna was speaking about this miglo, which was tied up with a rope, kosher hamanul bechevel, uboy sakin al mipsake, and a knife is required to cut it open. Says Rashi, do you have a matzi al mipsake biyadei? Because if he can merely use his hands, he can manually open up this lock. Sharper dummy, I feel Reb Elezer, will be fine even going to Reb Elezer. Dei chaticha asur el b'mechuber, because the isur chaticha malacha would only apply cutting away from something. Mechuber, perhaps Rashi means something which is connected to the ground. So he's pulling something off. He's cutting something off from something else. Whether connected to the ground or whether he's chopping something off from something else. Aval hocha mekalkalu. Here, he's not cutting a piece. He's not slicing something from a larger piece. He's merely destroying something. He's breaking apart this lock. He's cutting open the rope. He's destroying it. Vishorin, that's mutter. The kelim which are sealed, matir, he can untie, mafkia, and rav, b'choytechen, cut them. Ve'avak of the hol oil hu, ask Rashi Akash. Perhaps we're speaking about a migdal which is large in size, which is an oil. Famin hasam, and the Gemara tells us there, shebekarka asalachtech. He cannot cut open the seal of something which is in the ground. So how can he go ahead and cut open the lock, the rope of the oil, which is considered to be like a structure? Says Rashi, it's only gzeirah derabbanan here. The mechzik is soiser. That limitation is only a derabbanan, because it appears like he's demolishing. Why say sebinyan mamishu? Because he's not really doing soiser. He's merely opening a doorway, an entranceway. He's breaking this thing to get the thing open. So it's only derabbanan. So although we're speaking about oil, there's no malacha derais here. And as we know, we discussed this a number of times, since it's only Issa Durabana Shvus, that won't apply Ben Ashmashes, which is the moment when the Erev needs to take effect. So since at that moment he has full access to the food inside this locked Migdal, the Erev has been activated. So this is the Shita, going back to the Shita of Rav Meir, who says that even a knife can be employed to break open this Migdal. Whereas according to Reb Elezer, if he can use his hands, that would be fine, as Rashi just explained. The problem here is that he needs a knife. And Reb Elezer follows Reb Nechemya's shita that a knife can only be used for the sake of its designated purpose. El tzorich tashmishon. V'ikat tashmishon shel sakin. What is the primary use of a knife? Lo yilach techavolamu. It's not meant to be used to cut ropes. El lechem, a basar, bread and meat. Vo'eichlin. V'ochi pligi. And in summation, this is the machlekes. This is the pshat of the machlekes between the Tanakam and Reb Elezer. Tanakam less the Yirmiya. He does not hold the Yirmiya's limitation. Hilkach Eruv Ve'Erev. He holds his Erev is fine. The Pasuk Leila Misna, because he can simply cut through the rope using a knife. Reb Elezer says no. He can't cut through the rope with a knife. Therefore, he says like this. If he has access to the key, then he's fine. But otherwise, this Erev is inaccessible. Rav Lezer, I mean, im bi'ir avad, her is the Erev. If the key is in the city, then it's fine. The chimat kli maisle der kafifa is because he can go ahead and find the key and bring it through those storage areas, as we discussed in the previous blot. So he has access to that key, and he can go ahead and open this migdal. The mesada in erev. But if he lost the key out in the field, in which case he can't transport that key over to the migdal, then the food in the migdal is considered to be out of reach. The mifsik manu loimatsi. Because he cannot go ahead and chop that rope, open the manu, because the lezer follows the Rechemya shita, that a knife cannot be used for this purpose. So in summary, the halacha of the Mishnah is as follows. When he has the food locked into this migdal without a key in sight, according to Tanakam, it's okay because he can open up the ropes by cutting through with a knife, which the lezer holds, a knife cannot be used for this purpose. The Erev is inaccessible and therefore ineffective. Continues the Mishnah. Nisgalgal chutz l'tchum. So the person placed his Erev food at the Erev site. So generally, one would place it 2,000 amis away from his home in order to maximize the benefit of the Erev. So he has his home, and 2,000 amis away, he would place the Erev, which becomes his new Shabbos residence, which allows him to walk from there an additional 2,000 amis. So what happens if the person places his Erev at the end of the Tchum, meaning at or around 2,000 amis from his home, and his gagal chutz l'tchum, a wind came along and blew it away, it rolled out of the Tchum. In this case, the Erev is ineffective. Why? Explains Rashi, because it's too far away from him. At the point of Bein HaShemoshes, where is this fellow? Where is he? He's sitting in his home, which is right now further, more than 2,000 amis from his food, because it rolled out of the Tchum boundary. It's now 2,000 amis and 10 amis away from his home. So he's too far from that food. He can't access it during Ben HaShemoshes, and therefore that Erev cannot take effect. That's one example. This Gal Chutz L'Tchum. Another example of a problematic Erev is Nafal of Gal. A pile of stones fell onto the Erev, making it inaccessible. Oy Nisraf, or it got burned. Oy Truma of an Itmis. Oh, it was Truma and became Tame, in which case it's inedible for all. So it depends when this happened. Mi Ba'idyoim, if it happens still during daytime, before the Bein HaShemoshes, Eini Erev. This Erev doesn't work because it wasn't present during the time of Bein HaShemoshes, when the Erev is meant to be implemented. Meshech HaShecha, but if it happened after nightfall, how is the Erev? In this case, it works. Why? Let's take a look at Rashi inside. So, with the lines of Rashi widen at the bottom of the Amid, let's take a look three lines above that. Meshech HaShecha, says Rashi, if it happened when it was already dark, then it's okay. Kvar kana Erev, Bein HaShemoshes. The Erev has already acquired, has already generated the Makom Shvisa. V'Shabbos Hoyel V'Hutru Hutru. Once Shabbos had already received the Heter from the Erev, once the Erev had already been established and implemented, that Heter of the Erev maintained itself throughout the entire Shabbos, even if the Erev disappeared sometimes through Shabbos. So again, if the Erev was destroyed prior to nightfall, the Erev doesn't work. If it happened after Hashecha, then it's fine. Continues the Mishnah. What if there is a Safek? Im Safek, we don't know when it happened. If it happened prior to Bein HaShemoshes, in which case the Erev is not Chal, doesn't take effect, or it happened later, after Bein HaShemoshes, in which case the Erev is valid. So we have an uncertainty. We can't assume that this Erev was safe and present at the location. He's a confused fellow. He's in limbo. He's a chamor gamal. What does that mean? He must approach the situation stringently, assuming perhaps the Erev was not there during Bein HaShemoshes. So if he had a home and placed the Erev 2,000 amas away, so you have a suffix. If the Erev was there during Bein HaShemoshes, so this allows him to walk 2,000 amas in this direction, 2,000 amas in the other direction, and that's fine. If the Erev was not the Adorim Yashmashes, so the Shvisa was really in his original home, because the Erev wasn't there. And this allows him to walk 2,000 amas in this direction, 2,000 amas in the other direction. So one thing is for sure, the space, the area between his home and the Erev, is fully permissible. Either way, whether the home was a Shabbos residence or the Erev was a Shabbos residence, that allows him to walk in this area, 2,000 amas between the home and the Erev. So this location is fine. This area is perfectly mutter. However, he cannot walk in the other direction. Meaning, there's one side of the coin which says, well, perhaps the Erev was implemented, was there during Ben HaShemashos, which allows him to walk in that direction as well, past the Erev. But on the other hand, perhaps the Erev was not there during Ben HaShemashos, which results in his home being considered his true Shabbos residence, which doesn't allow him to walk past that Erev. It only allows him to walk 2,000 amas this way, 2,000 amas the other way. So again, between the Erev and his home, he certainly can walk. But anywhere in the other direction from his home the other way, and from the Erev in this direction, in this case, is a Safek. He cannot use that area. He's a Chamor Gamel. He's in limbo. Rashi says it's like a person who's leading a donkey, who runs ahead, and at the same time trying to lead a camel, who's lagging lazily behind. So he's stuck in the middle, being pulled in both directions. This person can't assume that his house is the Makom Shvisa, which allows him to walk in the other direction. Can't assume that the Erev created his Makom Shvisa, which allows him to walk past the Erev in the other direction. The only place which he's allowed to use is the Erev between the home and the Erev, and that's Mimano Shach, because either way, that area is Mutter. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, we can't just assume in a situation of Suffolk that the Erev certainly was there, because when he placed it there, it was fine, it was healthy, it was tar, it wasn't burnt. Perhaps we should say, well, let's apply a chazaka. When he placed it there, it was present. Let's assume that that status continued, at least throughout Ben HaShemashos. We don't say that. We go l'chumra and we say, well, we're not sure whether or not the Erev was present, was valid during Ben HaShemashos, and it cannot rely on the Erev. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Aymer, Safek Erev Kasher. When there's a suffix regarding the validity of the Erev, we can be makel, and we can say, yeah, let's assume that the Erev, since when he placed it there, it was fine. Let's assume that situation, that status continued. The Chazaka tells us to keep the Erev in place. Let's assume it was present during Ben HaShemashos. So although now it's been burnt up, but that happened recently. During Ben HaShemashos, we presume that it was there, and therefore he can rely on the Erev to walk past the Trum. Oh, Rabbi Yossi, I'll prove it. Av Tumas, that was his name. Heyid Mishum Chamisha Skenim. He testified the name of five elderly Talmid Chachamim. Al Safek Erev Shekasher. And we have a Safek regarding Erev. We follow the lenient approach and we say, we assume that the Erev is Kasher. Continues the Gemara. Nisgalgo Chutz Trum. That was the first case in the Mishnah. The Erev rolled out past the Trum. In which case, the Erev is too far from him. And therefore, is not kosher. Amar Rabba Leishano. This is only a concern. Elosh and Nisgalgal Chutz La'arba Amis. If it rolled past four Amis of the Tchum. So we have the Tchum, and the Erev rolled away more than four Amis from the Tchum, in which case it's out of bounds. It's inaccessible to him. Avol Lesoich Da'ad Amis. But if the Erev rolled, but it's still within four Amis of the Tchum, let's say you have the Tchum, and the Erev is only three Amis outside the Tchum, that's fine. Aval sech dal damis. Ha noisne ruvoi yesh loi dal damis. Why is it fine? Because whenever a person places an Erev at a certain location, that becomes his residence. That becomes his makom shvisa. It's like his home. We regard it as like a Rosh Hashanah yachid status. So although it's not enclosed with machitzes, but it's considered to be his personal space, his personal residence. And that encompasses an area of four amis, which are considered to be one and the same entity. It's one usage area. It's one residence. Says Rava, if that's the case, so even if the Erev rolled out of the Tchum and it's within four amis, then what happens is that the Erev creates a makom shvisa, like a home, like a Rosh Hashanah Yachid, within that area of four amos. And since it's only three amos out of the tchum, so the four amos actually extends back into the tchum. And we view the Erev as though it's still inside the tchum. And if it's in the tchum, then it's fine. Continues the Gemara, Nafal of Gal, this was the next case in the Mishnah, so a pile of stones descended on his Erev. Kosalka the Gemara figures at this point that he can simply remove those stones manually. It's only a question of Mokza. Kosalka Daitach, the boy, if he would like, Matzi Shakale, he can manually remove those stones. So what's the problem? Stones are Mokza. And since the only way he has access to his Erev is by doing Mokza, which is a Drabbanam, so since during Ben Hashmashes, he didn't really have access to his food because it involves Mokza, that's why the Erev isn't effective. Says Zigmar, Leima, my sister, like Rebbe? Shall we say that our Mishnah is not following Rebbe's Shita? The Iker Rebbe, because otherwise, Rebbe holds, Ha'amar Kodava Shom Shom Shvus, like Gazrol Ben Hashmashes. The Issa Drabbanon of Shvus doesn't apply Ben Hashmashes. So since this situation only involves a Mokza, which is only Issa Drabbanon, that won't apply Ben Hashmashes, which is the point in time when the Erev is implemented. So why wouldn't it work? Why won't we consider him to have full access to his Erev? Says Mafilo Tema Ker Rebbe. Even if you'll say that our mission is following Rebbe, like Tzricha, apparently we're speaking about a case, the Boy Marvachat Sina. He can't simply manually remove those stones. They're embedded, they're absorbed, they're sunken. He needs to have Marvachat Sina, these tools, a shovel, an axe, to unearth those stones, which is considered to be a Melachim Natur Chayfer. Therefore, that prevents access to the Erev. It's Melachim HaTorah. And since the only way he has access to his Erev during Ben Hashmashes is by doing a Melachim HaTorah, that Erev is considered to be inaccessible and ineffective. Says the Moritz Shrichi, why does the Mishnah need to begin with two cases? The Erev rolled out of the Tchum, so due to its location. And the next case, it was covered by stones due to the fact that it's inaccessible. Why does the Mishnah need to describe for us two similar situations? In both cases, the Erev is invalid. Why is that needed? The Itan and the Sgal of the Mishnah will only speak about the Erev which rolled out of the Tchum. I would say, yeah, that's no good. Mishum de Lesa Gabe, because it's not here. It's out of bounds. It's inaccessible. Avonafel of Gal. However, in the case where the Gal fell on the Erev, the Issa Gabe, it's still within reach. It's still within the Tchum. It's simply being blocked over. Emel Avi Erev, perhaps, in that case, it's a fine Erev. Therefore, the Mishnah needs to describe that case as well. The Itan and Afel of Gal. If the Mishnah would only cite the second case, I would say, well, that's really at a disadvantage. Mishnah the Mikhse, because it's covered over and it's inaccessible. And therefore, it doesn't work. Avon is Skalgo. But if the Erev is really here, just it rolled out of its home, perhaps in that case, I consider it to be valid. Because Zimnan the Ossi Zika, perhaps sometimes a wind will come by, Umaisile, and roll it back in. Therefore, I consider that to be a proper Erev. A Malav Erev, perhaps, due to that reason, we should consider this to be a proper Erev. Tzricha, therefore, the Mishnah needs to cite both examples. Both types of deficiencies. One rolled out of the Tchum due to its location, and one covered up by those stones due to its inaccessibility. Says the Gemara, Oy Nisraf, Truma Vitmis. We have another two cases. The Erev was burnt, or was Truma that became Tamei. Why does the Mishnah find it necessary to describe these additional two scenarios? Ulamali says Gemara Tana Nisraf Lodicha Kochet Rabbi Yosi. The reason why the Mishnah speaks about the burnt Erev, that highlights the extent of Rabbi Yosi's Shita. Even if it's totally burnt up, it's incinerated, it's not around, Rabbi Yosi nevertheless maintains that we assume this Erev was here at the right moment during Ben Hashmashes. So that's why the Mishnah describes this case as well. It's a chiddush. Tana, Truma v'nitmes. Why does the Mishnah mention the case of Truma which became Tamei? This highlights the Shita of Rav Meir. Meaning, even though the Truma is right here, it just became Tamei. Perhaps that will be reason to apply a chazaka. You have something here in front of you. Let's say this thing that's here has a chazaka, a presumption that it was a proper Erev during the Ben Hashmashes, because when he placed the Truma there on Friday, it was tar. Let's assume that that situation, that status, continued continuously through the Ben Hashmashes. So Rameyah's chiddush is that even in this case, no, we go to Chumrah, as the Gemara will explain for us why we go to Chumrah involves a din ha-Torah. Therefore, we're meant to follow the Chumrah, and we don't follow the Chazakah. Let's take a look at Rashi inside the top line. So the case of the burnt Erev highlights Rabbi Yossi's chiddush. Even though it's not present any longer, loy mitzer doesn't become asar. We assume that it was here during Ben Hashemashim. The case where the truma was burnt, that teaches us the extent of Rabbi Meir's shita. Even though it's present, it's here. There's room to think, there's reason to believe. Hamidana ben Hashmasha is al cheskasa. Let's assume that during the ben Hashmasha's point, the chazaka can be applied because prior to ben Hashmasha's, this truma was tar. Let's assume that during ben Hashmasha's as well, it maintained that status and was still tar. Even so, we don't say, contrary, we don't apply a chazaka which results in a leniency. Continues the Gemara on the second line. V'savar Rameya sveik l'chumra. Indeed, does Rameya hold that when we have the suffix whether the Erev was around, the Erev was tameh, then we go l'chumra and we say, we can't rely on the chazaka just because when he placed it there it was fine. Let's assume that that status continued throughout Ben Hashmashos, and the Erev was present, the Erev wasn't tameh. Is that the case? We seem to have a Mishnah that indicates to us otherwise. We have a suffix. When something is tummy, Rameh tells us we can follow the chazaka, even if it results in a leniency. Says the Gemara Vatnan, haven't we looked at a Mishnah? Tummy Shiara Litva. A person who was tummy, who went down to the mikvah to be tavil. Now, there was a suffix that resulted from this experience. Suffix tavil, suffix loy tavil. He has a suffix whether or not he was tavil. Or another case, afilu taval, or let's say he knows that he was taval, but safik taval barbar misa, he doesn't know whether the mikvah contained the proper amount of 40 sa. Safik loy taval barbar misa, whether the mikvah did not have barbar misa, he doesn't know whether his tefillah was valid. Was he taval in 40 or not? Or another case, we have two mikvahs in front of him. Ba'achas yesh barbar misa, one contained 40 sa, ba'achas ein barbar misa, the other one does not contain 40 sa. But Tavol Me'echad, Ba'achas Me'em, he knows he went to one of them. Ve'en yodeh be'ezmen Tavol, he's not sure which one he used. Sfeikai Tomei. This situation is a suffix, and he remains Tomei. Ba'meh devar ma'murim, when is this said? Ba'tumah chamura. When it involves a stringent tumah, Rashi explains, he was Tomei, a tumah da'i raisa. Avo b'tumah kala. Well, let's say this person was tamei only a lenient tumah, only a tumah derabbanan. Kigoyin she'ochal oichlin tameim. For instance, he ate tamei foods. V'shasa mashkin tameim. He drank tamei drinks. Or another two examples of a tumah derabbanan. V'abo roishe v'rubay ma'im shuvan. Or his head and most of his body entered ma'im shuvan, drew on water. Oishe naflu. Al roishe v'arubay ma'im shleishe lugam ma'im shuvan. Or three lugam ma'im shuvan were poured on this person's head and most of his body. So these are all different types of tumas derabbanan, as discussed in the beginning of Masechet Shabbos. This fellow wants to free himself of this tumah. Miyar Litvol, he went down to be tovel. And his suffix was generated by this experience. Suffix tovel, suffix tovel. He's uncertain of whether he was tovel, not feel tovel, or in a case where he knows he was tovel, but there was a suffix as to the quantity of the water in the mikveh. Suffix tovel by Ram Sa. He doesn't know whether he was tovel in 40 sa, safek loy tovel bar mem sa, or he did not. Or he had a choice of two mikvahs and he went into one of them. Ba'achas yesh bar bar mem sa, one of them contained 40 sa, and the other one didn't. Ba'achas ein bar bar mem sa. V'tovel ma'achas man, he was tovel in one of them, ve'ein yodea be'ez mem tovel. And he's uncertain. Which one was the mikvah that he immersed in? Sfeikoy tohar. In all these situations, we say that the safek has a din of tahara because it's a suffix, tumah derabbanan. Rabbi Yossi mitamei, even in this case, he holds that it's tamei. So in any case, we have a kasha from this Mishnah, which is a sta Mishnah, an anonymous Mishnah, which is presumed to be Rameir, where Rameir tells us that a suffix tumah, in the case of a tumah derabbanan, we go lekula, we say it's tar. This is in contrast with the halacha in our Mishnah, where Rameir tells us, when we have a suffix as to the status of the Eruv, we go lechumra. The Gemara assumes at this point that the Erev is only the Rabbanan. So why should we go to Chumrah? Says the Gemara, Kasav Rav Meir, Tchumah D'Raisininu. Rav Meir holds that the Isra of Tchumah, leaving the boundaries, and subsequently the placement of the Erev, which allows one to go past the Tchum, is a Din D'Raisa. It's Isra D'Raisa that's involved here. And therefore, when there's a Suffolk in this context, we must call the Chumr, as Rashi says, Sveika D'Raisa L'Chumr. Therefore, Rav Meir maintains that we can't rely on this Erev, which is a Suffolk Erev, as opposed to the Mishnah, which is discussing, in the second part of the Mishnah, discussing a Suffolk, Tumah D'Rabbanan. Certainly in that case, we go L'Kul. Says the Gemara, V'Sover Rav Meir Tumah D'Raisu? Does Rav Meir really hold that Tchumen is D'Raisa? V'Ha'atanam. We have a Mishnah which seems to indicate otherwise. The Mishnah here is describing the manner in which they would calculate, they would measure the boundaries outside the city. So they would use a rope which was 50 amas long, and they would measure in increments of 50 amas. Now what happens if they reach a steep mountain or a deep canyon? The Mishnah tells us there's no need for them to actually measure the surface area of that steep mountain or deep canyon. If this canyon can be swallowed into the 50 amma rope, so you have a person standing on either side of the canyon holding that 50 amma rope, and the canyon fits into that 50 ammas, then you can just measure it right on top without actually entering the canyon and measuring the very surface of the canyon. Likewise with the mountain. So if it can be swallowed within this 50 ammas, you're okay. The Mishnah says, Tanan, im ein yochel avliyah, but if the canyon is too wide, the mountain is too wide, he can't swallow it into the 50 amma rope. So what does he do then? Bezu, in this case, Amar Rav Distai, Bar Yanai, Mishum Rameir. So he said, Nimer Rameir, Shamati, I heard from my teachers, my Rebbeim. What method is employed here? Shamati Shemekadrin Beharim. We bore through the mountain. Now, we don't literally mean we drill through the mountain. Rashi explains that we employ a method as follows. We only calculate the horizontal angle of this mountain. So you take a small size rope, 4 amas in length, held by 2 people, and they hold it just about vertically, horizontally I mean, and they make their way up the mountain, measuring 4 amas at a time. So in this case, they're not really calculating the actual slope, the actual surface space of that mountain, which will result in a much larger calculation. Rather, they go up and down the mountain using this small rope, which really results in them calculating just about the horizontal angle only. So this is actually a kula, a leniency, because if they would count, they would measure the actual mountain, it would result in a greater shear. So this is the term called mekadrin b'harim, as though they're boring through the mountain, meaning as though they're measuring, calculating with a straight line through the mountain, not taking into account the slope. Shomati shemekadrin b'harim. Now this is a leniency applied to measuring, to calculating the shear of tchum. This doesn't apply to a measurement which is required min ha-Torah, as the Moral explained. Now, if you maintain the Rav Meir holds that the concept of tchum is based on d'Oraisa, mi mekadrin? Can we employ this method of calculation? We're not meant to do so by d'Oraisa. V'omar Rav Nachman, omar Rav Ravua. He told us as follows. Ein mekadrin. We don't employ this lenient method of calculation. Loi b'orim miklot. Not when it pertains to halachas min ha-Torah. For instance, the orim miklot, which were these cities to which a person who killed somebody b'shogeg would run for protection. Not only the city itself affords protection, but even the municipal boundaries, the tchum around the cities, are for protection. So when they calculate, they measure the tchum, they can't employ this lenient method of mekadrin. B'loi b'egla rufa, nor when it comes to calculating the distance between the city and this person who they found dead, so the city closest to that person is required to bring a korban for kapara, the egla rufa, the calf which was killed. So the city closest, how is it measured? You cannot measure using this method of mekadrin. These are calculations of Torah. So apparently if the Mishnah allows us to employ this method when it comes to Tchumei Shabbos, this proves to us that Din of Tchum is not Torah. So how can you tell us that Rav Meir holds that Tchumei D'Raisa and therefore goes to Chum? It says, Malay Kasha. The Torah is very simple. Hadi Day. Rav Meir himself personally holds Tchumei D'Raisa, therefore he goes to Chum. Hadi Rabbe. This halacha mentioned in the Mishnah, the name of Rav Meir, was not actually his personal shita. It was the name of his Rebbe. Deikanami. Because if you pay close attention to the wording of the Mishnah, it is indicative of such. Because the Mishnah says, Diktami, Bizu Omar Abdistai Rav Yane, Mishnah Rav Meir. He quoted Rav Meir, Shamati. Rav Meir says, I heard. Meaning, I heard from my Rebbe. Shemakadim Baharim. We employ this form of measurement through the mountains when it pertains to Tchumen. So it was his Rebbe's opinion. Well, that Tchumen is Midrabanan. Shema Mina, indeed, this is a Raya. That it was only his Rebbe's Shita, but he himself holds a Tchumen Adaraisa. And therefore, he goes Lechum. So in summary, the Mishnah gave us four examples where the Erev is not valid. If the Erev rolled out of the Tchum, the Gemara tells us, it was past four Amis. If a gal of stones fell on it, well, he needs to do it using a tool, which involves a malacha, or got burnt, or the truma became tamei. So if it happened during daylight time, the Erev is invalid. If it happened at night, then it's fine. If there's a suffix, Rav Meir holds that truma namin atoira, he holds it's possible, because we go to chumra. Rav Yaisi, who apparently holds truma namin lidrabanan, therefore he holds that we go leniently, and the Erev is kosher. Continues the Gemara. So at this point, Rav Meir will hold that something which involves a din toira would not allow us to follow the chazaka. Therefore, the Erev, which has a suffix of whether or not it was tamei during Ben Hashmashes, we will consider it to be tamei. We can't say, well, since when he placed the Erev there, it was Torah, let's assume that situation maintained itself throughout Ben Hashmashes. Let's follow that chazaka. No, according to our mayor, since it is in Torah, we say suffix derives to the chumrah, and we can't assume this Erev is valid. Since we have a rami derisa derisa, lura mayor, we have an apparent contradiction between this case of a suffix deraisa, where Rav Meir goes lechumra, he doesn't follow the chazaka, in contrast to another Mishnah, which involves a chazaka, in the case of deraisa, Rav Meir does follow the chazaka, and he maintains that the person is Torah based on chazaka. V'rami deraisa deraisa li Rav Meir. That's not as we learned in the Mishnah. Noka be'echad b'layla. A person came into contact with another person in the darkness of night. V'eini yedeyem chayimeis. And he was unaware of whether that person was alive or dead at that moment. And if he's a mace, he is metame, the person that touched him. So there's a suffix there. Ulamachar, and tomorrow, hishkim umatzameis. He got up and found this person to be a mace. So we have two conflicting considerations. On the one hand, we have a chazaka, that everything's fine, because this person was seen alive yesterday. So let's perhaps assume that situation maintained itself throughout the night. And therefore, this person who touched him is tar. On the other hand, in the present moment in time, this person is a mace. Let's assume that this situation began already last night. So we have two conflicting considerations. Which one do we follow? Rav Meir Matar, he says this person is tar. We follow the original chazaka. This person was seen alive yesterday. Let's assume he was alive at the point of contact. V'chachamim etamen, they say this person is tamen. Shekol ha-tumais k'shas metziyosan. Tuma is meant to be dealt with according to the present moment. If it's tamei now, let's assume retroactively this situation was present during the nighttime as well, and therefore when he touched him, this person was already mace. So we see that Rav Meir follows chazaka, and he maintains that this person is tar, despite the fact that we're speaking about a suffix tumei d'oraisa. This is in contrast with our Mishnah, where he doesn't follow the chazaka. Omer Rabbi Yirmiya. Generally speaking, Rav Meir does follow Chazak. However, our Mishnah is speaking about a unique case. Mishnah Seinu, Shoyo Leo Sheres, Kol Ben Hashmashes. Speaking about that the Sheres, this mouse, which is Metame, the Truma, was present on the Truma the entire Ben Hashmashes. So there's no suffix here. It's a Vadai that this Erev is invalid. Says the Gemara, if that's the case, Ihachi. If so, Bahal Lemir Rav Yosi, suffix Erev Kasher. Would Rav Yosi say that it's a suffix Erev and it's Kasher? It's a Vadai Tame. Says, well, no. That's not what Rav Yirmiya meant. Rabba Rav Yosi, Damri Tavayu. They both explained, this is what Rav Yirmiya meant to say. Hocha b'shtei kitei eidim askinan. In the case of Erev, we're speaking about where there are two kitei eidim, two groups of witnesses who are offering conflicting testimonies, conflicting accounts. That's what exactly happened with that Erev. Achasay meres, one group is saying, b'joy mitzma, became tamei by day. In which case, the Erev is not kosher. Fa'achasay meres, the other group is saying, well, this Erev became tamei at night after Ben Hashmashes. In this case, Rav Meir holds, we can't follow the Chazaka. We can't say, well, since initially The Truma was tar. Let's assume it maintained that status throughout Bein HaShemashes, because we have two Edom who are opposing, who are giving us an account which opposes that Chazakah. Therefore, we're meant to follow the Chumrah, since it pertains to Edin HaTar. In contrast to the Mishnah, where the person touched somebody in the middle of the night, there are no Edom there. There are no testimonies which are conflicting, which are opposing the Chazakah. Therefore, in that case, certainly follow the Chazakah, even according to Rameh. We say, since this person was seen alive yesterday, let's assume safely that this person was still alive during the night when this person touched him. And therefore, we say he's tar. Continues the Gemara. Rav Amar. Rav agrees to this concept, but just adds one more point. Even if we say that the story of Noga Bechad Balayla, when he touched that person all the night, unsure whether he was alive or dead, is speaking about a similar case where we had two Edom, two Kitaid and two groups of witnesses who are offering conflicting accounts as to what happened. Even in that case, Rav Meir will hold that this person is tar. We follow the chazaka. Why? Hasam tre chazaka lekula. Because over there we have two chazakas lekula to this person's benefit. Number one, this person was seen alive yesterday. Let's assume he was alive throughout the night. Number two, the person who touched him has his own personal chazaka. He was tar prior to that experience. Let's assume that chazaka, that situation, maintained itself. So since we have a double chazaka, we can follow that even when it's opposed by those Edom. In contrast to our Mishnah, in contrast to our Mishnah, we only have one chazaka l'kula. We have the chazaka which says, well, initially the truma was tar prior to Bein HaShemashes. Let's assume it maintained that status through Bein HaShemashes. But since it's being opposed by the testimony of those Edom, Rameh maintains, you can't follow the chazaka. So in summary, we have a suffix tumah according to Rameh. If it involves only a tumah derabbanan, Rameh holds his tar. If it involves a tumah deraisa, so generally we follow the chazaka. There's a cheskas tumah, and he's tummy. If the cheskas tahari is tar. But if there's a cheskas tahari which is opposed by one of those two groups of Edom, in this case we can't follow the chazaka, and he's tummy. However, when we have two chazakas which oppose those Edom, in this case even Rameh agrees that he's tar. Okay, time for a brief review of today's daf. The Gemara began by explaining the case where he locked his food in the migdal. Rameh says it's okay because he can access it by using a knife to cut through those ropes. Which Reb Lezer holds, a knife cannot be used for this purpose, and therefore the Erev is inaccessible and ineffective. We discussed four cases where the Erev is invalid. It rolled out of the Trum, was covered by a pile of stones. It got burnt, or the Trum became tummy. So if it happened prior to Bein HaShemashes, it doesn't work. If it happened at night, then it's fine. If there's a suffix, Rameh maintains, since Tchumen is the Eraisa, we can't follow the Chazaka here, and we say the Erev is Pasal, which Rabbi Yossi holds Tchumen is the Rabbanan, and therefore the suffix Erev is Kasha. And the Gemara concludes, although generally Rameh follows Chazaka, but in the case of the Erev, since there are two Edom who are testifying against that Chazaka, therefore we can't rely on the Chazaka, and we say suffix Erev is Pasal.